Welcome to Catalyst Conversations, the podcast that brings you real-world stories and solutions from a wide variety of acoustic experts. Each episode, we'll dive into a different topic from the world of acoustics, such as architectural and industrial noise control, seismic and vibration restraint, acoustical testing, or innovative design and engineering of sound control products. Our experts have decades of experience in this space and are eager to share their expertise with you. Join us in making the world a quieter place.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Catalyst Conversations. I'm Lisa Morrow, and this podcast features 10 tape discussions between Richard Lenz of Real Acoustics and Sam Burkow, founder of SIA Acoustics and the SIA Software Company. Mr. Lenz has been in the field of sound for over 40 years, beginning as a sound engineer for such notable artists as Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr., before pivoting to designing and building speaker systems, owning recording studios and a concert venue, and designing and developing acoustic products. Mr. Burkow is accomplished in his own right, and like Richard, has worked on the acoustical and sound system designs for concert venues, recording studios, and both indoor and outdoor performance spaces, including Vic's Jazz Bar in Las Vegas, the location of the discussion you're about to hear. Suffice it to say, both gentlemen are well-versed in all things acoustics, and listeners are about to be in for a treat. Without further ado, let's jump into the talk.
Topic one, the difference between scattering and diffusion.
Hi, everybody. Sam Burkow here from SIA Acoustics, a division of RDA, and I'm sitting with Real Acoustics founder, Richard Lenz.
Hello.
Real Acoustics is a company that makes acoustical diffusers and other treatments to absorb bass, absorb a wide range, wide frequency range sound, scatter sound, and we're going to spend today talking about a number of topics with Richard.
Sounds good. I appreciate it.
Great. Topic number one, scattering versus diffusion. There are lots of ways to break up a wave. One way is to use irregular shapes, triangles, pyramids, hemispherical divisors. I just heard a bell ring. I don't know where that came from. There are lots of ways to break up a sound wave. You can have irregular surfaces, and that will take the waveform and take the specular reflection and scatter it over a number of angles and lobes. Or you can try and diffuse it, where a complex surface with a series of wells phase shifts the energy over the diffusive frequency range to give you the widest spread.
Right. Yeah, I always go back to Schroeder. Mm-hmm. Schroeder created the device we now refer to as a diffuser, which ended up being the quadratic resonant diffuser based on his 3 years.
Is there a picture of Manfred Schroeder right up here now?
Oh yeah, there will be.
Okay. Hi, Dr. Schroeder.
Got to give him credit.
Great.
But what he described scattering as, in very simple terms, was the pattern of a reflection. Doesn't matter what that pattern is. It is the pattern of the reflection. So when he was creating diffusers, he was looking for a specific type of energy reflection.
Distribution
over space. As well, yeah. And he ultimately came up with it. But in his terminology, scattering is simply what kind of reflection are we getting off of that device. So it's going to be different for, as you said, for a pyramid or a barrel or anything, multiple angle boxes, whatever the case happens to be. So, scattering to me is always going to be a definition of what is that reflection.
Great. I think one of the big unknowns or misunderstandings about diffusers, and particularly quadratic residual diffusers, which is a name that comes out of the mathematics used to define these surfaces by Dr. Schroeder, a Bell Labs fellow of great import. Have you ever seen his resume?
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah. It's, in the Audio Engineering Society, I think it took 4 or 5 pages to include. It was the number of patents and articles is impressive. When you have a diffuse field, the net energy flow is zero in any direction. It's equal, energy is going in every direction. That doesn't really happen in recording studios because you get a semi-diffuse field where there's some diffuse energy, but there is also these reflections that go on for 3, 4, 5 interactions with boundaries.
Right.
And by the time they've gone a number of mean free paths in a room, they start to decay away and they're gone before the sound field becomes truly diffuse.
Right.
The question is, what is the advantage or disadvantage of a diffuser versus a scattering surface?
The biggest advantage of a diffuser, and again, I'm going to, when I talk about diffusers, I'm going to talk about quadratics. Mm-hmm. QRDs, as they're commonly known. The biggest advantage is, number one, there's pattern control to it. That's huge because, you know, we're not wasting energy going all over the place like we would with just a standard pyramid or something like that. So this energy comes back in the case of a one-dimensional, like what you see behind you, it comes back in a very horizontal pattern back to the listener. And in this case, we're on a stage, so it comes back to the musicians and to the audience in a diffuse field, which they can now, you know, it comes in also in a very specific pattern, and it has multiple reflections off of it. So it's a different, it's a whole different animal than just scattering.
Great. I hope that made sense. We're going to move on to another topic.
Topic 2, diffusion.
Hi again, Sam Burko here from SIA Acoustics, a division of RDA, with Richard Lenz, the founder of Real Acoustics, a manufacturer of sound diffusing, absorbing, and manipulating products.
Scattering.
We're sitting here on the stage at Vic's Jazz Bar in Las Vegas, Nevada. And the question is, what do you hear when you add diffusion to a room?
Well, the biggest comment that the average person will, that may not understand the science of it, the biggest comment they'll make when they put it in is when a diffuser is put in to a room and they've had an opportunity to listen to it both ways, is that it makes the room sound bigger. Now, that may sound very strange because sometimes these devices typically are no more than 8 to 10 inches deep max. So how does it make it sound that much bigger? It's because it's not a single reflection. An impulse response put into, which is just a single form, waveform, whether it's a multiple frequencies or single, going into a quadratic will come back out as multiple reflections over a very short period of time. In this case, somewhere between 1 and 2 milliseconds per reflection. And it could be as many as, in the case of the good panels, 12 reflections come off of a good panel.
Oh.
Yeah, as opposed to a normal QRD, which would be around 6 to 8. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, it's different than the rest. But the, you know, so the, what happens is that the ear hears these multiple reflections and it feels orally like the room is bigger.
It's bigger. I think it's interesting because there's a anthropologic view of reflections of sound that our ancestors would hear a twig snap and they would be sense danger.
Right.
In a room, two things clue you if you blindfold yourself and you walk into a room. Either you feel the low energy be modal, as in a very small room. We were working in edit suites and they felt small. So we added some of your bass mods and all of a sudden the rooms felt bigger. We felt you were in a bigger space because your ear clued on to the fact that there were these low frequency modes, waves, uneven low frequency that were indicative of a small room. The same thing happens when you add diffusers at mid and high frequencies, that your ear says, oh, that's a strong reflection. There must be a wall back there that's relatively close, because the time relationships is your ear is able to discern them.
Right.
When there's lots of energy spread out, it's coming out, and you, instead of having a big peak, you spread that energy out over 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 milliseconds.
Right.
All of a sudden, your ear is, this must be a bigger space because those reflections have gotten refracted or broken apart or scattered or diffused.
Diffused, yeah.
And the space feels larger.
Right. Yeah, and it's, you know, it is. And the thing is that we can't detect it but we feel it. A diffuser is something that you feel more than you actually hear.
That's great. I love that. I think there's a t-shirt in that.
That's the one.
A diffuser is something you feel more than hear. I like it.
Yeah, that's true.
Great. I hope this made sense. And we're going to move on to topic number three.
Topic three, Real Acoustics Good Panel.
Hi, this is Richard Lenz with Real Acoustics. I'm here with my friend Sam Burkow of SIA Acoustics, and we're going to talk right now about the Good Panel, which is what you see behind you on this wall at Vic's Nightclub in Las Vegas, Nevada. We're here to have a discussion about what makes the Good Panel different.
Right. The Good Panel looks different. Most one-dimensional diffusers that scatter horizontally or in one dimension as opposed to horizontally and vertically, look like a series of different depth wells.
Right.
Shallow, deep, deep, mid, shallow, deep, some repeating pattern. The Good Panel back there looks very different. These are 2-inch thick and they're 4 foot by 2 foot panels. And in this case, they're being used on the upstage wall of a jazz club. But we've used them in ADR rooms. We've used them in recording studios, in tracking rooms, in control rooms. A wide variety. They come on walls. They can be hung in ceilings. You make a ceiling grid version of it.
Right.
There are actually a couple of good panels above us and covered with fabric, so we can't see them. Allows us to buy them in MDF or less expensive wood than the mahogany behind us.
That's true.
That's true. So let's talk about the good panel. It diffuses sound from around above, slightly above 700 hertz up to 810K.
Right. And that's one of the big differences is that most one-dimensional designs that you see out there, almost all of them, will roll off between 4 and 6K. That's pretty normal. And they certainly have the purposes. We build those as well. But the idea when I designed it, there were two things that make it different. One is the patent that I have on it is based on the asymmetrical cellular design. And that helped to get rid of low frequency absorption. So what happens in a quadratic, a standard quadratic, is that low frequencies also get in there because they're all the same length. And so there's nothing impeding them from getting in. That doesn't happen with the good panel. The good panel basically views low frequencies as specular reflections. It breaks them up, but they don't go into the cells. And so consequently, it's probably 7 times more efficient than a regular QRV.
Wow. I love the good panel for a couple of reasons. One is that 7800 to 1.5K frequency range, that low SH sound, right, that starts out 2-3K, the fact that it's that energy is scattered so effectively really makes the human voice, it eliminates a lot of the comb filtering and the negative effects of strong reflections. And it really creates a diffuse field much faster and much more effectively than other panels.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about time, okay? Everything about quadratics is about time. But the advantage here is that the good panel is fully diffused within 4 inches of its face.
Wow.
And most other quadratics are somewhere between 2 to 4 feet before they're fully diffused. And that's a huge difference in the sense of why you can't perceive what's coming off of the panel, but it's doing it really well.
Wow. I think one of the things that I like best is they look really cool.
Yeah.
I love the look, and the owner of Vic's Jazz Club saw these panels in mahogany in a recording studio that we built here. We put them both in the tracking room and in the live room. We used to put a number of them and liked them so much. He said, let's use those as well if we need diffusers on stage. Putting diffusers on stage is another topic that we'll be talking about in this series. And anything to finish up about the good panel?
Other than I'm grateful that you use it so much, you and many others use it so much. It's there's a lot of other applications too.
Is it possible to make a good panel that's deeper? Would it go lower?
You know, we're working on that, but because it's made out of wood, it becomes somewhat impractical, a little bit to, you know, create a much deeper. And I'm not sure what the advantages would be. We'd have to test it and see.
Well, I mean, the advantage would be breaking up some waves at lower frequencies.
Lower frequencies, obviously.
Obviously, that's the nice thing.
Topic 4, the use of diffusion and absorption together.
Hello, everyone. My name is Richard Lenz with Real Acoustics. And next to me is my good friend, Sam Burkow, with SIA Acoustics. And we're here to talk about today, we're going to talk about kind of an interesting discussion in the use of diffusion and absorption together, which is a topic that many acousticians will disagree on.
Is there any topic many acousticians don't disagree on?
And it's just fine. It's, you know, everybody it's has their...
Fine with you. Not fine with me. If I were to buy, let's say, a good panel, which is the panel you see behind us, geometric uniform diffuser. Good, G-U-D. It's a clever marketing thing, those three-letter acronyms. These people all love that stuff. But the good panel, when you buy it as a diffuser, you get some absorption for free. It's built in. In almost all QRDs, when you hang a diffuser on the wall, you're effectively hanging some absorption as well. You'd like to speak about that for a moment?
Yeah, the purpose of the good panel is actually to get rid of most of that.
That's right.
Absorption. It's very, very little absorption in the good panel. But in standard diffusers, like our RQS series, things like that, we'll always have absorption in them. And a lot of designers like yourself will use that to good effect.
Right.
You know, for instance, I always like to point out the Boston Symphony. Mm-hmm. If you look at the Boston Symphony Hall, it has a bunch of quadratics, single, you know, one-dimensional quadratics on the back wall. And they weren't put there to diffuse. They were put there to absorb low frequency.
Oh, wow.
You know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so consequently, I mean, there's an advantage, obviously, when the frequencies hit it that are in above the range and in the range they work in, it will diffuse, but it really was there to control low frequencies without being overabsorptive. And typically what happens with a quadratic is there's a very limited range at which it operates. You know, for instance, if you take like our RQS 450, which is 7 inches, 7.25 inches deep, it's right around 100 hertz, but it's a reasonably broad Q on it and that it will absorb frequencies at. That comes in very handy in studio applications.
That's right.
You know, where you can actually say, okay, I don't need to put as much, you know, fuzz as we like to use on the wall, you know, absorption panels, fiberglass, whatever they happen to be. You know, I don't have to put those on the wall because I can get my absorption from the diffuser and it will sound more natural.
I've rarely found that I can get enough low frequency absorption from the diffuser. I'm thinking of a studio we did up in Sonoma County recently where we put 5 bass absorbers behind a wall of QRDs that were 7 inches deep or 9 inches deep. And what we found was that the low end just, it was like someone took a ratchet and tightened it up.
Yeah.
All that boom, went away.
Right.
And it's a combination of the diffuser providing absorption. I think that the good panel offers a really interesting sort of dichotomy. You need low frequency control, and you would get some if you used a traditional QRD, but the non-traditional QRD gives you less absorption and more effective diffusion. So the fact that it is efficient means that it scatters more effectively and there's less energy absorbed.
Correct. Absolutely.
I think that's pretty good.
Yeah,
you get that? Where's the drummer?
Topic 5, Real Acoustics Bass Mod Absorber.
Would you like to introduce this one? You'd like me to do it?
I'd like.
You can leave this in, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
People like this kind of thing.
I know.
I like this kind of thing.
Be now.
Hi, my name is Sam Burkow, and I'm from SIA Acoustics, a division of RDA, and sitting with me here on the stage at Vic's Jazz Club in Las Vegas is Las Vegas native son, Richard Lenz, the founder of Real Acoustics. Hi, Richard.
Hi.
This video, short video topic, is the bass mod absorber. And the base mod is a diaphragmatic absorber.
It is.
It uses a sheet of steel and effectively a spring or a resilient mass, a resilient material behind it. And it acts as a membrane absorber, and they're effective from 100 hertz down to in the 40s.
Yeah. Depends on the model. We have a lot of different models. You know, base absorption has been something I've been working on a lot the last 3 years. We've made base absorbers since the beginning for 15 years, but I was never really comfortable with the way that they were tested, because there is technically no test for testing frequencies under 125 hertz. I should say an authorized test, like an ASTM or ISO test. And, you know, some people are using, without getting too much into the test methodologies, but you would use an impedance tube, which is a long tube. And but the problem is that we need to test in the way that things are used, what we call in situ.
Yes. Right?
And this is where the base mod differs from everything else out there, is it's actually tested well. We have developed, I'm on the ASTM committee, so we've developed a test for base mods that makes it vastly different than everything else, because you can now trust what the real is.
So when I'm looking for a low frequency absorber, and there are lots of applications, control room acoustics being a very big one. We've been using them on the stage of relatively small venues. Right. When there's lots of bass energy on the stage and musicians want to hear each other that aren't on in-ear monitors, we add a series of bass mods to the upstage wall. What we do is we pick a number of frequencies, and we'll say broadband for we'll pick 73 hertz and say, make it as broad as you can. It might be half an octave wide, or 4/10 of an octave, or 3/4 of an octave. Or we'll say we're concerned about 55 to 62 hertz, and say, make us one that's 57 hertz and is, you know, a quarter octave wide, or and we're able to get that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the advantage. When we talk about width, we're talking about the word that's used, Q. Right. That's the word we use. So, you know, the advantage of the base mod series is we've now come to the place where we can give you an adjustable Q, we can give you a center frequency, and we know, because of the test data that we have, we know that it will work in that range. I was never comfortable in the early days, even when I was making them for you. I mean, I had my own test that I used, and it worked. I remember when you did Mickey's Place.
Yes.
Yeah, it was...
That would be the great Mickey Hart.
Yes, the great Mickey Hart. So, you know, years ago we did one, and he asked for a 50 hertz went underneath Mickey's monitor.
So above. It's up and behind. Yes. Right.
And so I used an impulse response test to figure out how to get there. You know, but unfortunately that you know, you can keep doing that, but it's a daunting task to do that. So, you know, we came up with a methodology in using a reverb chamber to do it in the modal field, which nobody ever does. But But we're talking about devices that stop modes. That's the whole point.
That's the point.
Yeah.
Topic 6, testing and design of Real Acoustics base mod absorbers.
Hi, Sam Burko here from SIA Acoustics, a division of RDA. I'm based in New York City, and with me is Las Vegas native and current Utah resident, Richard Lenz, the founder of Real Acoustics. This series of videos is talking about the designs I do, the products that Richard makes, the way we interact and talk about acoustics. And I think this is the first time we can announce a new series of base mod panels that represent a major change. I've suggested to Richard that he calls these the base mod series 2 or S2 units, but we'll see if he follows up on that. That was just a suggestion, S being secretly for Sam. The base mod has been our go-to low frequency mode controlling absorptive device. It's a diaphragmatic absorber. It's a steel plate, magic material behind it. Secret sauce, Richard calls it. It's essentially a spring, whether it's neoprene or some other material. And the size, shape, stiffness of the spring, the weight of the panel, all go into your calculation and measurement techniques to define the center frequency and the bandwidth, or Q, of the absorber.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, the base mod has been a long time. I mean, I've had a base mod series. We've had a base mod series for 15 years, yes. I guess, so that we've been doing it. And but it wasn't until this last couple of years where I spent a lot of time testing and really figuring out, one, how to test them so we know exactly what they're doing. And second was to how to adapt that testing into being able to give a designer like yourself, an acoustician like yourself, what you want. Because bass frequencies are something that everybody wants something different. They want a different frequency, they want a different cue, whatever the case might be. And I wanted to be able to do that for
them. I'm proud to say that we've used bass mods in a wide range of projects, control room acoustics being a big one, and also stage acoustics, and that'll be a topic for another video. But in this case, something has changed. And if we put up a graphic of the absorption of a traditional bass mod, it generally has a peak,
right?
One peak. The corner bass mods have one peak, and they tend to be a bit broader in range due to their form factor. We use both the corners and the flat traps, but for stages, flat traps just fit better. What's interesting is the bass mod S2, or new bass mod, has two absorptive peaks. Do you want to talk about that a bit?
Yeah, we've been messing around, and actually it was accidental. I'd love to say it was something I created on purpose, but it was really an accident to find out where to create. Because we're talking about pressures. We're not really talking about, typical, volumetric type of, like a fiberglass panel or something like that. You have to test, these very differently than you would that type of panel. And it varies. Obviously, it's a lot different than, people say, well, I can just throw a 4-inch fiberglass on the wall. No, it's not what we're talking about.
It doesn't work like that.
No, because it's not broadband. It's not intended. Broadband in a bass trap would be an octave,
right?
Maybe.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, what's really interesting is the frequencies we're really focused on with bass mod are 80 hertz and below, right? It's your subwoofer frequencies. And if you look at the complaints that people have in control rooms, you see notches at 90, 85, 77, 73, 57. There's a notch somewhere.
Right.
And a lot of this comes from people using room designs that are rectangular because they're easy to calculate, and you have overlapping tangential and oblique modes that gang up and get you, or axial modes that happen to have a null right at the mix position. We've been using room shaping, including asymmetric corners, to handle that, but as that technique using asymmetric corners really stops being effective about 65 hertz, we often look for your products to help us on the lower side of the range.
Sure.
that's working in, 70 hertz, and everything from 65 down. So we're looking for relatively small panels to impact large waveforms.
And that's the thing, these are huge waveforms, and it brings to mind is like, well, get these engineers, I'll just EQ it out. And you can't do that because then it affects your music.
Right. The thing about EQ, and I'm someone who uses EQ as judiciously as possible, but uses it regularly on monitoring systems to optimize the interaction of the room and the speaker system, or the speaker system and other parts of the speaker system. For example, left and right speakers, or the left and right and the subwoofer, or low frequency extension devices. So we're happy to use EQ when it's appropriate, but all that does is eliminates the energy that is causing and feeding the mode, if you will. And you don't get rid of the time that energy is hanging around.
Yeah.
You're just putting less energy into that time. And it sounds better, but it's better to get rid of the mode.
Right.
And damp the mode with a really effective absorber. One of the things I thought was really interesting in the first product tests, that the absorptive peak of these new S2 series bass mods, snuck that in, seems to be in the 45 to 32 hertz range. Right. So there's a lower absorptive peak and a upper absorptive peak for the new base mods.
Yeah, and we can create that. I mean, a lot of times people go, look at that, go, why is that there? You know, and say, well, if you don't want it there, we can get rid of it. It's not a problem. But, you know, it's to have those dual peaks at times is very handy, especially in the very low range, because, you know, that low one was in the 40 hertz range.
Sure.
And that's, you know, sometimes a very problematic frequency.
Oh, it's great. I haven't used it yet. Are you selling them now? Are they available?
Yeah, they're available.
Okay. I think that it's really, I don't know you can have too much absorption below 45 hertz.
Yeah.
In most control rooms. I mean, you're getting towards the pressure zone where it's really low frequency stuff and the whole room is impacted. And if your panels can absorb those frequencies, it just acts to clean up the low end in the room without taking anything away from the listening experience.
Absolutely.
So I'm very excited about this new Bass Mod S2. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Topic 7, Staggering FlutterX.
Hi, everyone. This is Richard Lenz with Real Acoustics, sitting with my good friend Sam Burkow of SIA Acoustics. And we're here to talk about...
This video is about Staggering FlutterX.
Staggering FlutterX. Now, this is something I'll do a little bit of an introduction about. First time I ever saw Staggering FlutterX was with my friend Sam Burkow in the job we did in Hollywood, in L.A. with...
Old Glenn Glenn Sound.
Old Glenn Glenn Sound, which I thought was really cool. You know, Glenn Glenn Sound has been around for, probably 60, 70 years.
Glenn Glenn Sound facility was... taken over by Chase Deluxe.
Yeah.
And we were brought in to upgrade the sound of some rooms, and they had a large stage that they wanted to turn into an ADR room.
Right.
And one of the issues was the sidewalls were quite hard, and instead of just deading them out to make people feel a little bit more comfortable, I had staggered FlutterX. So let's talk about FlutterX first. FlutterX is a one-dimensional strip product. It comes in 5.5-inch widths, right, and it's a prime 13 diffuser. You want to explain what that is?
So prime numbers have to do with quadratic residue diffusers. The higher the prime number, the more wells, the more different depths of wells that you have, and it gives you better definition in a bucket to keep it simple. FlutterX was originally designed for sidewalls to get rid of what we call flutter echoes, and you know that that you hear in all kinds of rooms.
Yeah,
you know, it's churches and various other places. So
associated with parallel walls.
Right, it's associated with parallel walls. It typically is something that happens when you have hard parallel walls, and it gets rid of that. However, Sam uses it to great effect by staggering it
in plan.
In
Is there a picture here of a staggered group of folks?
I hope so. I'll see if I've got one.
I've got plenty. By staggering, what we do is we put a runner horizontally on the wall so we can put some absorption behind the FlutterX.
Right.
Typically some mid-density fiberglass, 4-pound, 3-pound, 5-pound. Depends on what we're trying to do. We'll put a couple of inches, and then we'll have panels that stagger out by 1-inch thickness. The panels are 5.5 by 1.
Right.
And I think you sell them in 8-foot strips or whatever size.
8, 10, 12. Yeah.
So we stagger them so that we call the first one 0 and then 1 and then 2 and then 1 and then 0, 1 and 2. Sometimes it's we do it one way and then the other way. And there's lots of examples, and hopefully I'll find some pictures that we'll be floating about while I'm saying this. What happened on a project was the installer called me, the contractor installer who was installing the staggered FlutterX, said it didn't break up the flutter. And I'm like, it's Saturday morning, I was with my son, and I said, "Kate, do you mind if we stop and take a look at this?" And he rolled his eyes and said, "Sure, thanks for your patience, buddy." And we stopped over there, and of course, they hadn't installed the stagger, they just did it flat. And what's interesting is that this flood record was quite strong with it flat. But as soon as we made that little 3-inch stagger, the flutter echoes went away.
Right.
And what's the frequency range of a standard flutter echo?
I mean, typically, it's going to start at about 2K.
Right.
1,500 to 2K, because it's only 1 inch there.
Right. Well, by making the diffuser stagger over 3 inches, we extend that down quite a bit.
Right.
And it really works. It's been a great go-to for us. I've probably done it in 30, 40 studios, and we have them in a lot of studios. We've done them in live rooms as well. People like the sound of drums off of those staggered diffusers. These are, again, 1D diffusers, and we use it as a combination of mid-frequency absorption and high-frequency diffusion.
Right.
Really works really well, and that's how we start our... These conversations that have been going on for the last more years than either one of us would like to admit.
Amen, but yeah, it's been a wonderful example of how to use an existing product in another way to create a different thing.
I've always thought that you guys should sell the Flutter X in staggered strips.
We do now.
I know. it took a decade or two. it's a good product. And this is a really nice technique that almost anyone can build. For you guys who are do-it-yourselfers, this is an easy one. The hardest thing is finding a nail gun that fits in the welds.
Yeah.
You got to get a nail gun that has has the nose that fits in the weld, so you can get it in there and hang the thing with essentially finishing nails that don't impact the look. You don't see the way they're attached. But it's been really effective, and I really like this technique, and it's now old school, but still very effective and has a nice look. And if you don't like the look, cover it with an acoustical fabric. So that's staggering Flutter-X. Oh, before we go, do you make a lower prime number Flutter-X? Is there a Flutter-X 11? I thought I read about that.
Originally I did.
Right.
But the 13 was, everybody kind of just...
Works better.
Yeah, works better. And everybody adopted the 13. We are now making a new one called Flutter Max.
Wow.
2 inches thick.
I'm sure you don't want to call it Flutter X S2.
<That's> a...
what is going to be different about Flutter Max?
Well, aside from obviously a lower frequency range that it works in, it's going to be monolithic, so it allows us to put it on walls and still have get rid of flutter echoes, but actually have more diffusive performance at a lower frequency.
Yeah, and it's
much like a good down.
But it's still an inch, or is it now 2 inches?
It's 2 inches thick.
It's 2 inches thick. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
How come I don't know about this?
Because we haven't introduced it yet.
Uh-huh.
This is the first time we've talked about it. So it's,
Sam, meet Fluttermax. Fluttermax, meet Sam. You heard it here first. Fluttermax for real acoustics. Have a great day, everyone.
Topic 8, designing a performance space.
Hi, my name's Sam Burko from SIA Acoustics, a division of RDA. And I'm sitting here on the stage at VIX Las Vegas, a local jazz club that I'm fortunate enough to be part of the design team for. I'm sitting with Richard Lenz, the founder of Real Acoustics, manufacturer based in Utah, who makes sound absorption, diffusion, scattering, all sorts of bass mods, bass mod 2S, S2, bass mod S2s, and Fluttermax. A wide range of acoustical products. VIX is a jazz venue based here in Las Vegas, and we're diagonally across the street from the Smith Center, so a little ways off the strip, north of the strip, and it's a wonderful place to come hear a set of jazz, have some dinner, have some drinks, and enjoy the atmosphere. When I was approached to join the design team, the owner of VIX said, we really want it to be a great sounding room for our audience. And I came back with, we want it to be a great sounding room for three separate groups of people. Your audience, your performers, and your production team that may be bringing events to the audience outside of this, the recording team. Whether that's AV and streaming or new. So one of the things when you expand the definition from just great sound for the audience or great sound for the performers, you have to start thinking about what performers hear and feel on stage. And we found two critical things are creating a diffuse field, which makes it easier for each musician to hear each other. And also by bringing diffusive elements onto the stage, we're able to make the room more comfortable for microphones.
Right.
Microphones hear reflections of sound in a way that's much more apparent and destructive than humans, because humans, our brain filter out a lot of the comb filtering effects. Not all of them, but why don't you hear sound bouncing off of every tabletop? Effectively you do, but your brain processes it into a small tonal shift and it doesn't really matter. If we see the wall behind us here, it's filled with 8, 10 good panels. There, each one is 4 by 2 by 2 inches thick. And the good panel diffuses from about 750 hertz up to 8, 9K. It also provides very little absorption. So a lot of the absorption on this stage comes from the heavy 22-ounce velour curtain behind us and from a number of bass mods and other low-frequency absorptive materials and diffusive materials above the stage.
I think one of the things that makes this interesting for me, and I come from the music world. I was a sound engineer for years. I was a musician before that. You know, we're going back a long time. But, you know, it's very unusual in my experience. It's very unusual for anybody that owns a nightclub to care what the stage is. And that's just the honest truth. You know, unless it's a very high, well-known vehicle or something like that, you know, like you get into jazz and some of the stuff you've done. But, it's really interesting to me and to see this kind of venue put the time and the money into making the venue sound great, to make the stage sound great, because the more comfortable a musician is, the better they're going to play.
For sure.
When I look at these canted walls and how you enveloped, I get what you did, how you envelop the sound into so that it's going both directions, that they're hearing each other, that, there is such, I haven't played on this stage, but I can imagine how well the musicians love it, and because of the way, the time you took to figure it out,
right.
It's a pleasure to me to see that, especially in a venue this size.
We've been playing with the stage acoustics. And when I started out in acoustics, my first job was with Russell Johnson, the great concert hall designer. And there was a wonderful group of acousticians working at Artek at the time. And there was a lot of discussion about using acoustical canopies to create strong reflections, so you could have cross-stage communication for a symphony orchestra. Well, I knew that wasn't what we really wanted for rock and roll,
right?
Inherently, we wanted to get rid of all those reflections. We didn't need cross-stage communications. We had monitors on stage, and Marty Garcia came along with other people and introduced in-ear monitors, which are one of some of the best things to happen to rock venues and larger venues. But in smaller venues, when a lot of the energy coming off the stage is reaching the audience and your sound system is really for balance and to
true
make it louder, it's reinforcement. It's not what you're at Madison Square Garden. You're just listening to the sound system, in VIX, you're listening to the musicians and the sound system. And the sound system's there for vocalists so they can keep up with drums and you can play with some power, and the vibraphone over there can keep up with the bass, and you have to create that balance somehow. And audiences want a bigger than acoustic sound for the most part. By creating stages that have both diffusion and low frequency absorption, you're making it easier for the musicians to hear each other. You don't get into that endless cycle of, I can't hear, so I'm going to turn my instrument up, I'm going to play louder, and everyone becomes a cacophony at some point.
Right.
That's what we've tried to avoid. And I think this approach has been really effective, whether it's the SF Jazz Center, which has an upstage wall that has both studio level acoustics, or an acoustical canopy that has really mid-low frequency diffusers and absorption in it above the stage, quite a lot of diffusion above that stage. The number of Brooklyn Bowl venues where we've put low frequency absorbers on the upstage wall behind the curtain to extend its absorptive capabilities down into the 50, 60, even 40 hertz range.
Right.
So the use of diffusion is not just for studio control rooms anymore. It's not just for breakfast anymore.
It's not breakfast. It's breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
So. Right. What's really impressive is how much more comfortable the sound reaching the mics is on a stage where you've gotten rid of a lot of the low-end sort of sound
right.
that we really don't want on stage and really clogs people's hearing from hearing the nuance and tone of the melodic instruments.
Yeah, and it almost doesn't matter what type of music it is. I mean, it can be, you know, low frequencies, because they propagate so much. If you can control those, really control those, it's going to make everybody on stage much happier.
Right. I think that one way of thinking about it is the use of cardioid subwoofers has been a major topic over the past 25 years. And from very few people offering a cardioid subwoofer product to everyone offering a cardioid subwoofer product. But the idea of reducing the amount of low frequency energy on the stage, but giving the musicians a cleaner environment to work in and for the mics to not have to be low cut as severely, really helps the sound for everybody.
Well, it makes a lot better on the sound engineer as well. You know, it's having been in that world, it's, you know, I wish I was mixing back in those days, you know, I mean, in these days, as opposed to, you know, when we had digital consoles now and we had analog everything and all that, but, you know, that, you know, that's the great progress that's been made in the music world.
I think so. And I'd like to think that for people doing venues up to 1,500 to 2,000 seats, doing or more, doing low frequency, effective low frequency absorption on or around the stage is becoming a higher priority. So in summary, I think that we've shifted from Russell Johnson and the acousticians of, and room designers of his era, thinking that what really matters is making it sound good for the audience and for the performers, the orchestral performers, to thinking about make the designing rooms so that the audience hears something that's uniform across the audience. The performers can hear each other on the stage without loud monitors, and the production team can get clean and wonderful recordings that they can send however they're going to send them to the expanded audience. And that's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. Thank you.
Topic 9, control room design.
Hi, my name is Richard Lenz with Real Acoustics. I'm here with my good friend Sam Burkow of SIA Acoustics. And we're here to talk today about control room design.
Control room design.
Imagine that.
Imagine that. So we've been designing a lot of control rooms. And we've come up with what we think are a number of innovations. We use a lot of Real Acoustics products, rear wall diffusers, like QRD diffusers, typically the 450, which is about 7 inches deep.
Right.
And we've gone up to 9 or 11 inches deep with
350 and 250.
Right, with the larger units. We've used sidewall diffusers, the FlutterX that we stagger. There is a video about that. We use the bass mods. A number of the things that we've been doing where we splay the sidewalls, we do asymmetric rear corners, we splay the ceiling low in the front, higher in the back to push energy onto the rear wall where our diffuser sits. We use our diffuser as mid-frequency hopefully even mid and low frequency diffusion with low frequency absorption, either behind it or around it. The asymmetric rear corners provide a modal distribution, which we think is quite good and provides less variance at the mixed position. We've shown that in the work that modeling with Christian Carver, you met Christian, right. He's a great guy, smart guy, for sure. One of the questions is that I've been looking at lately is how did the older control rooms differ from the control rooms of our day, right? And I've come up with a couple of things. One is they didn't have low frequency absorption because people weren't listening to low frequencies in those rooms.
And yeah, not much was being propagated.
That's right. Yeah. That even with a stand-up bass, those basses didn't really, in the 1950s and early 60s, there was much less thumping and power and chest pounding.
Well, with no amplifier, I was a bass player. It was like, it goes all of about 4 feet. Yeah.
I'll be talking about a historic studio that I'm renovating, I'll tell you this offline. But I've been thinking about that a lot. And what I've noticed is a lot of these rooms were cubic. They were rectangles, they were squares. And I've had clients say, if it was good enough for the Beatles, it's good enough for me. And I'm like, if you happen to be as good as the Beatles and your production team is as good as the...
Everybody was John.
Yeah. George Martin and Jeff Emmerich and those guys. Sure, two tin cans and a string, you could probably make great sounding records. But for us humans, an accurate room is important. There's a large number of people who believe that using rectangular rooms allows you to calculate the modes more easily and more accurately than in rooms with splayed walls. I found that, yes, it's easier to do. It's not necessarily more accurate once you add furniture and racks and a console. The finite element and finite boundary mathematical techniques allow us to calculate the mode distribution quite effectively for low frequency response in non-rectangular rooms, in splayed wall rooms. And that's how we've come to use a lot of the bass mods.
Right.
Where those low frequencies that we need and those modes that we need to damp, particularly those under 65 hertz, we now have a tool that we can add to the room design, typically behind the monitors.
Well, and that's the whole purpose of the time that we do is to provide tools.
Right.
You know, that's all, as an acoustics manufacturer, we're providing you. I like to think that, we provide better tools, and I'm not saying us personally as a company, but in this year, in 2024, we provide a lot better tools. And we have a lot more tools now than we had 15 years ago when I started doing this.
It's funny. One thing I noticed about older and historic control rooms is that the glass windows always tilt down, directing energy towards the mixed position. There'll be monitors in front of the window, and the off-axis response hits that window, and it goes right back to the mix or under the console or through the console. And frankly, it acts to degrade the accuracy of the response at the mix position. So why did people do that? Do you know?
Well, they were trying to get rid of a parallel reflection, off the window, so it didn't come straight back at the wall.
Right. It turns out that's partially true, but the big motivator was to get rid of glare from lights. That if you tilted them flat or straight, you got more glare from lights. Fortunately, lighting today is incredibly sophisticated, and it's no problem to get rid of lighting glare. And by tilting the windows bottom out, top in, it reflects the sound upward into the ceiling where we have lots of treatment. We have a slanted window here at Vic's in the private dining area, which does exactly that. So the private dining area, it's an operable window, and it's open for most times so people can enjoy the show. But if they wanted to have privacy, at least acoustical privacy, they can drop a slanted window down. I think that's really what I want to say about this.
Good.
finished another topic.
There you go. Good job.
Topic 10, Acoustics Overview.
Hi, everybody. My name is Sam Burka from SIA Acoustics, a division of RDA, and I'm here with the founder of Real Acoustics, Richard Lance. And we're sitting here at Vic's Jazz Bar in Las Vegas, Nevada. And what you can't see is that there are other diffusers above us and some bass absorbers as well, hanging in a three fabric covered ceiling clads.
Right.
So let's start with a simple definition, scattering versus diffusion.
Well, I always go back to the beginnings, and the beginning of diffusion was Manfred Schroeder in 1975. And Dr. Schroeder defined what we now refer to as a product of diffusion. Diffusion is actually a process, but you know, as a diffuser, the idea was to create something that diffused very quickly. Everything diffuses eventually. You know, sound waves travel through the air and they bombard one another, it becomes diffuse. But his concept was, and he was a big fan of classical music, and so he wanted to find a way to make your typical classical hall, a shoebox style, not so just reflective as they normally are, but he wanted a diffusive ceiling. And so this was a pet project for him. He was working for Bell Labs. What did he care about? You know, it wasn't part of his work. This was a lark for him, and he got a few other acousticians involved as well. But the concept behind diffusion and scattering to, and I love Schroeder's definition of scattering. His definition is scattering is the pattern of the reflection. Doesn't matter what reflection it is. You know, it could be off of a wall. How does that wall look when it reflects? That to him is scattering. So when I started Real Acoustics 16 years ago, I decided I did not want to confuse the terms diffusion and scattering, because they've been misused a lot over the last 40 years or so. And so if a product does not diffuse, really diffuse within, my opinion, 3 feet of the panel, it's a scatterer. And we look a lot, a lot of people say, well, I've created this product, or we have this product that's an extruded QRD. By that, one's with building blocks. You know, it looks like a bunch of building blocks. That's not really a diffuser, because what that does is scatters. It does, and if it's designed well, they can do it well. You know, it can be a nice 360 degree hemispherical design, but it's not diffuse. It's a single reflection. A diffuser has multiple reflections to it. As in the quadratics you see behind you and other quadratics that we make and other people make. And so that's really what you have to look at, is scattering is the pattern of a reflection.
Right. I like to think of scattering as using irregular shapes, whether they're triangles, pyramids, hemispherical diffuser scatterers, that basically change the direction of a reflection. And they spread it out a bit, but it's not a uniform diffuse field over a given frequency range. You're just breaking up the wave.
Right.
With a diffuser, the energy comes in and the diffuser shifts the phase by a series of wells to create the maximum amount of diffusive angle, if you will. Right. The largest angle for that frequency range that you can. So you reduce the specular reflection the most, and you create the most uniform diffuse field possible.
Right. Now, and obviously one of the advantages of a quadratic residue diffuser, and not necessarily with primary root or stuff like that, we're really going to be talking about quadratics here, is that it has a very defined pattern that comes out. And really, the big advantage, and a lot of people try to describe what a diffuser does, and I've been listening to this for literally 30 years, and it just kind of changes the sound of the room, and it does, and it feels bigger. That's always the thing you hear, feels bigger. Well, the reason it feels bigger is because it's not just one. If you put an impulse response, a single impulse response, into a quadratic, you will get a minimum, if it's a decent quadratic, you'll get a minimum of 8 reflections back. And they're usually spaced by 1 to 2 milliseconds. And that's the brilliance of it, is that, you know, and we have, you know, we have these simulations now. We've done particle simulations where we can show that. And that, and it really now allows us to see what a diffuser is actually doing. It also helps us show the pattern of a diffuser. So if you look at, like, these back here are one-dimensional diffusers. And we talk about one-dimensional and two-dimensional, and, you know, it's a hemispherical pattern, but it, there's very little vertical energy to it at all.
In a one-dimensional.
In a one-dimensional. It all comes right back, which means that it's focused. The more focused that energy is, the better it is, and the more phase mixed it is. You know, now a lot of people aren't going to really understand phase all that well, but think of it, you know, most audio guys will understand phase when you talk about a subwoofer, you know, two subwoofers and one's out of phase. You know, if it's 180 degrees out of phase, they cancel each other. Right.
That's out of polarity.
That's, yeah.
180 degrees phase shift is a polarity shift.
Yeah.
But, whether people say it is or not,
yeah,
it effectively is.
But when you talk about a diffuser, I mean, we're talking about shifts of 1 degree, 2 degrees, you know, not anything the ear can actually make out. The human ear can't really define it. I always use the concept of diffusion the same way I would listen, you know, I would be listening to a recording. If I'm listening to a 16-bit 48K CD, and then I walk into the studio and I listen to a 192, okay, all of a sudden, it's like I can no longer hear dithering. And we technically, we shouldn't be able to hear dithering, but we do.
We can.
You know, I don't hear it anymore with 192 because it's so refined. And it's the same thing with the diffuser. The phase mixing is so refined, it comes back at you. And it, by the way, it comes back in a coherent fashion. That's really important to note, because a regular wall, frequencies will bounce off based on their frequency range, you know, whatever the length is of that waveform. Whereas with the diffuser, that doesn't happen. It all comes back in one uniform width. And that's brilliant. I mean, it's really a brilliant thing.
If you like what you heard and are interested in learning more, we have a few options for you. This discussion is broken out into 10 parts. If you want to dive into a particular topic, visit the Catalyst Acoustics Group website for the breakout of your choice. If you're more of a visual person, visit Real Acoustics YouTube page to view the video discussions. Thank you for tuning in today, and we hope you'll check out future Catalyst Conversations.